announcements, even when they use the word dissemination, they don't really get very specific, and maybe they should include the example of such as, submitting measures or establishing these outcomes as measures for whatever. I think that that may be what gives you some leverage to get more people on board with the whole enterprise.
The problem is, I think one of the reasons why we're facing the challenges we are, why there is such a dearth of material that's usable, that's relevant, is because historically, these are not the kind of endeavors that NIH has supported. In fact, it has been exactly what they have not supported. They have specifically not wanted to fund these type of proposals and not want to provide salary support for people to do this kind of work. This historically falls more under the province of AHRQ, which I think is probably more aligned philosophically with what the goals and aims are of this. But I hope, it's not to say that NIH should be more involved in this. And I think the tide has turned with the renewed interest in translational type of research. I think this piggybacks well onto that. And I think hopefully the tide will come in as far as NIH waking up to the importance of these kinds of projects.
I think the movement on payment reform toward performance-based payment or results-based payment will also incentivize this to be considered important for development.
And, the whole NIMH, this was the third conference on implementation, dissemination research. Francis Collins was there talking it up. Everybody's talking about T3, T4 research. I think there is a much more fertile ground at least NIMH than there ever has been in the past. And it's probably time to more formally try to cross that divide, if you will. I think there's some real money out there for this type of research, and it is not at all beyond the purview that was discussed at that conference of quality measure development implementation and looking at community health improvement overall.
Jeff, in response.
I'm not really stamped out of that. Much more concerned about the pragmatic realities of doing it and using it in a productive, useful way. So, it's got to be developed, but we also have a need to have it done.
Right. In response, I think it's a good segue into sort of the part two of the work for this group in terms of trying to come up with that agenda, if you will, in as granular a terms as possible. I mean, it's very easy for any group to say we need more outcome measures for depression and just walk away from that. The question I think that would be most helpful moving forward and is part of what we're hoping to see out of this is to be a little bit more specific. And as a result of the discussions of some of these measures today, you came up with some, you know, this is the way it is. It shouldn't look like this. It should look like this instead. And to the degree that we can create a set of recommendations on types of measures for the different elements of mental, behavioral health, substance abuse, whatever you want to, you know, wherever you want to put the parameters around it, and dementia. You know, if you recall back to the work you did in November, I mean, what I can envision and what other steering committees are envisioning is, like, for the area of dementia, we had nothing, so none of the boxes are blank. But we had this whole column of types of measures. Do you have that, Ian?
I did, and that was...
You had it yesterday. But if you remember, the first one was about symptoms, you know, outcomes of symptoms. You know, maybe it's not applicable for dementia. It might be for depression. It may not be for schizophrenia, whatever. But then other things are functional status. You know, what's a functional status outcome for Alzheimer's disease or dementias? What would that look like? You know, how would you describe that kind of a measure? Exactly. So the question is, as we go down the list of the types of outcome measures, what might they look like? What are the salient important elements of those types of conditions? And for this group, we'll have several types of conditions. We'll have the depressions and then however many serious other, you know, mental health conditions, schizophrenia, bipolar, anxiety, you know, however many you want to include. You know, but it's not just one outcome. There are a whole variety of types of outcomes. There's not going to be a measure for every box, but there should be several types of outcome measures for each of these categories that you could begin to envision based on the conversations, based on your lack of enthusiasm for what we have so far. You know, it's like, what would have made you happy? What were the measures that should be on the list that didn't come in the door? You know, that's what we're asking you to really think about and use your expertise is, you know, you look at the list and go, yuck, what would a good list have contained? You know, what should be the measures on that list? So, you know, here's just a printed version, but if you all remember, this is what we put out in the call for measures. So there's a whole bunch of types of outcomes, symptom outcomes, functional outcomes, health-related quality of life or well-being, change in health behaviors, social determinants of health in the built environment, particularly around populations but also individuals. Service utilization, we saw some of that with the... Oh, you've got it. Great. All right. Let me to read. Patient and caregiver experience. So we've seen some of those. Direct physiologic measurement. You know, not sure that's necessarily going to be most useful in this group, but drug screening, for instance, or some sort of... physiologic assessment. Non-mental health outcomes. I think this is something Harold was kept going on and on about because of the overlap, the considerable overlap between patients with mental behavioral health and other things. And the two are intricate. You can't separate them out in the care or the overall, management of the patient. So I think when we're looking at our gaps, to be as we really would like to work with you to be able to come up with a reasonably specific. It would be very easy to say, oh yeah, we need more measures of this, and that be the end of it. But I think this is the opportunity to try and give us something that would look more like the description of a measure, or you know, at least closer around, you know, what population and what element are you trying to assess? We don't want you to spec it out. We don't want you to develop a measure. But I mean, what is it? You know, in what population of patients, what outcome is it that you think would be very important and useful? Around symptoms, function, experience, safety, recovery.
There's some themes that we've sounded throughout our couple of days here. One is to try to align mental health measures with the NQF priority measures and a common set of definitions that apply, whether it's mental health or physical health, that it's an arbitrary balkanization of a patient. Patients are whole beings.
Yeah, and I think to lead off your set of recommendations with something just like that, and I think to support that, one of the ideas you've given us is the idea of going back and looking at all of our more general measures, see which ones actually already include mental or don't exclude mental behavioral health patients. But also, let's look at the ones that maybe do, but should they?
Right.
Ask the question, should they be excluded? Could it be more of a simple fix of just including them instead of excluding them? Well, whatever. But rather than, as you say, maintain the balkanization, do your best to break down the borders. So I think that's one approach. But then there are going to be things that are specific to these particular patient populations that you will want to look at that are unique.
I think the other area that we've touched on is this idea of coordination of care, handoffs, and clearly that's another NQF focus.
Mm-hmm.
To think that somehow we can arbitrarily separate the care in a hospital, a nursing home, the outpatient sector, the mental health community, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, people touch on multiple communities of healthcare providers or providers of service. We need to think about measures that can be applied across any of those and make systems accountable for the outcomes no matter where those services are delivered.
Yeah, I think another thing I think about from a public health perspective is that many of the things that we deal with as clinicians, particularly, for example, when you think about trauma, have their roots in violence and other more public health measures, so to speak. And we haven't really looked at that or talked about how those could be used in some way to help promote, for example, decrease violence, and then which would then promote less trauma.
Yeah, I think if you recall in our November meeting, one of my colleagues, Bonnie Zell, came in. We were talking about population health, and Bonnie is leading the work around population health for NQF. And I think one of the messages from this group that I can certainly transmit to her is don't exclude mental and behavioral health. Include them when, you know, bring them in and don't separate these areas. And to the degree, whenever possible, keep it all inclusive.
And I'd like to piggyback on that a little bit in regard to some of the chronic disease management initiatives that are going on and the similarities between a lot of those initiatives and how we manage some of the more chronic mental illnesses. I think there are a lot more similarities than differences.
Mm-hmm.
With medical home and the inclusion of behavioral health integration into medical home, I would really push that we try to be one whole system and really have very few carve-outs.
You know, I think along with that is we talk a lot about what are the measures from a psychiatric perspective that we want to include for people with behavioral health conditions. But the other part of it is what are we doing to promote their physical well-being? And I think that often gets overlooked, and we should be looking at those as we look at measures.
Yeah, that was one of Harold's big points.
That's a very big concern given the morbidity and mortality that we're seeing with the SMI patients.
I think another place we could look are our clinical practice guidelines. So we have a lot of them. And clinical practice guidelines are evidence-based typically, and they do talk about excellent care. So to grab a measure out of those would probably be useful.
So which measures, can we review which measures we actually endorsed?
Actually, did we do retention? Did I miss that?
Yes.
Okay.
Just a quick comment.
One of the real important take-home lessons for me is that the measures that we endorse from the Minnesota group about the time, the 6-month and 12-month remission of depression, I talked to them and they said the key thing, they worked with payers. This is through a healthcare system, and this was motivated by payers and done in conjunction with payers. And I think to me, that's a really important take-home point, that ultimately if you want something that will be usable and feasible and desired, that the payers are ultimately going to demand these types of assessments that don't exist now. So they need to be involved in the development of these kind of tools.
Another place you might think about connecting, and perhaps you already do, is with places like Robert Wood Johnson with their Aligning Forces effort. I mean, we're one of the 15 communities across the country or in AF4Q. And clearly, measuring outcomes on a community basis and doing it in a multi-stakeholder, including payer participation, is something that we have an advantage over a lot of parts of the country. And if we could make sure that we advocate as a group and NQF advocates for measurement that includes behavioral and mental health outcomes, I think could be very important. And many of these communities are doing really wonderful work. And it's much more comprehensive because it's on a population basis.
Can you guys see it all? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to throw two thoughts out. One is, you know, there is a unique problem, and I'm not sure necessarily that we are only folding ourselves into the medical home. I think actually in some ways we're going to have to help steer the direction of the medical home. And I'll just use as one way to think about it, the idea that the mind and the brain are the executive organs of the person. And one of the issues that you're going to find, I think, with the stuff that we were talking about today is, you know, what we're trying to do is to increase, in care of somebody, we're trying to increase their capability to move themselves, to make the decision, do the choice, and implement the behaviors and they have to make their lives be what they want them to be. And that, in some ways, suggests that there are so many possible things that people might want to attain that are different than, you know, whether or not we're controlling their heart, you know, their CHF or their asthma or whatever. They're actually attaining things with their new capabilities or their recovered capabilities. And I wonder sometimes if maybe our might not need to be based on actually asking people what it is that you hope to attain in this period of treatment, you know, where would you like to go? And can we work with you to help you get there? And identify that as the outcomes, maybe suggest some domains in which they would like to be moving along the lines that we've sort of had outlined, and use it more from in a kind of an emergent sense. So that's just maybe a totally bizarre idea, but I wanted to throw that out. I think it fits with the recovery-oriented approach.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it seems like it's part and parcel of the recovery model. I think integration with what's going on in the PCPCC and patient-centered medical home efforts, there's a whole behavioral health group that I've participated in off and on, where a lot of people are really excited about the integration of mental health into the patient-centered medical home and yet are struggling to find measures that integrate easily and reflect the sort of outcomes we've discussed over the last couple of days. So having some more formal interaction, purposeful interactions, and thinking about, okay, well, if we had some ideal measures, what would they look like? What would be their attributes? How would we be able to use them to demonstrate outcomes that are clearly the sorts of things that we want to get to?
I want to go back to the earlier comment about you know, working or collaborating with the payers when it comes to you know, relevance of some of the measures and execution of those or implementation. I know that there's other organizations out there, you know, from the payer side, not so much, but indirectly, the Pharmacy Quality Alliance and how, you know, potentially NQF could work with PQA or even NCQA. Because you know they all have, you know, develop, you know, they have their own measures that they develop as well as endorse.
And we have worked with both of those groups extensively.
And I guess one comment just to follow up, I guess both George and Jeff, what you've talked on. One, I guess, benefit of being an NQF member is that there's different organizations who are part of NQF, and we have different councils. There's 8 different councils here at NQF, and at some of our meetings, as well as other times, we try to make sure those different councils are working together and collaborating. And so I know one council that I sit on as a liaison is the Public Community Health Agency Council, which had an opportunity to meet with the really providers or payer councils. And so I think that was a very informative discussion and dialogue. And so those are some of our efforts in trying to move forward and really facilitate those discussions, and which actually AFRQ is a part of that. And Diane, who presented for the Minnesota Community Measurement, she is actually a co-chair on that council. So I know those discussions and talks are really trying to move forward and really make sure that every member is working together. So
I know we asked about this back in November in terms of NQF membership, but it's my understanding is that it's mostly other organizations that represent relevant fields. But are there is there any kind of individual membership or sort of a smaller group level of participation as in terms of not just NQF, but in terms of participation in associations that deal with quality improvement?
If you look at the NQF membership, you're going to see organizations of all sizes. NQF does not, at this point, doesn't have individual members, but some of our members are of organizations that are essentially one or two folks. So
that's
there's,
yeah,
they don't have to be, gigantic, particularly some of our consumer organizations. Some of those groups are very tiny. They're a handful of, part-time people kind of thing, aside from their executive director or something like that. So size does not, is not a qualifier by any means.
Where I was going with this is, you're talking about the April meeting for, where people
developers.
Individuals can call up and participate in a
sure.
meeting. And I was actually thinking that if we're trying to help people sort of acquire the concepts that relate to measure development and stewardship, and it's such an incremental process, and different people work in different corners of this. Some are doing a validation study. Some actually develop a tool, but that's not the measure. And if all the people who are cogs in that incremental process that bring us to the point where somebody can actually submit something where there has been validity and reliability established, where they've actually looked at feasibility, usability parameters, and now it's ready for prime time, and you can get a submission that's really meritorious, that is worthy. I think what we're getting, the reason we're getting such weak submissions is because people don't get that. So how can they learn it? Well, one thing is to have a phone conference, but maybe on a more aggressive scale to think about having, regional national meetings of, I'm basically saying, start an association of, call it whatever, quality improvement that could be the brainchild of NQF, and actually see if you can get people to come and present their work, even when it's in developmental stages. Talk to one another, foster the collaborations, because there are all these people who are on someone else's payroll. And as a nonprofit, you're getting grants to do stuff like this, but not to actually develop those measures. If you're going to rely on the field going forward to do that, then, you need an army. and I think that this, in a way, it's the stewardship of that village. But there has to be, a village needs a town hall and a town forum for bringing people together who are part of a community that can collaborate and create this. I think that the scientific community and the corporate health community aren't really there as a, the collegiality that you need to have productivity isn't there. So,
Joel, just one observation I would make is I think different sectors within the healthcare arena are in different places on a continuum.
Yeah.
Because I would say that in some areas, They are very, very much ahead of, measurement is an everyday thing. The developers who develop the measures have been doing it for years, and they know what they're doing. So in some areas, but I think there are areas within healthcare, and perhaps mental behavioral health might be one of them, where they just aren't, in that realm. They're trailing much farther behind. And also, I think the silos of the healthcare system, you don't necessarily benefit from what's going on, in the general medical, more that sphere, which I think might have a little bit more of that or be ahead of the game compared to your experience. So that the question is, how do we break down the silos? How do we bring in the folks in areas that have been lagging behind and kind of pull them in? And it's a struggle. And I think it's been one of the roles NQF has tried to play with its with our twice-a-year meetings. We bring people together, we talk about measures, we talk about measure implementation, how they work, what worked, what people are doing in development, and things like that. It sounds like there's always need for more.
It was very informative for me as when I got my subgroup assignment, work group assignment, to actually see some of the stuff that NQF staff had inserted existing measures and related measures, to see how there really is stuff that's well-developed, that's really state-of-the-art. And I was thinking to myself, reading these, if the measure developer who submitted could see that, it's all the background stuff that, if they were really on top of the field and knew about this, would have been in their submission. You guys had to add it. But I think that it would open their eyes, and it's sort of like modeling for them. This is what it looks like when it's done well. And, how do you learn to write your first grant? You read somebody else's and get a mentor to help you.
We heard from the very early years of NQF as we evaluated measures that one of the key elements was feeding back to measure developers the rich discussion and the elements so that they could understand more what the issues were. And again, that's where we've arriving at this, the measure evaluation criteria are as detailed as they are now, but they certainly weren't. 6, 7, 8 years ago. It's been an evolutionary process. And so for people who are just now entering the game, it may be a bit on the overwhelming side because they haven't been part of that growth. So I really do appreciate the difficulties that folks trying to learn this, because the learning curve is steep. This isn't stuff that is either intuitive or used by, average folks every day. So it's a relatively specialized area that it's a bit of a slog to learn it.
When people submit, like in December, when they submitted an intent to submit, did they get a copy, or somewhere along the line, did they get a copy of this?
It's actually embedded in the submission form.
Yeah.
Right. I guess, but I'm wondering if there's any kind of interpretive guidelines that go along with it, because I think for people who are really familiar with it, it makes perfect sense. I think for people who are not, some of it needs translation.
Yeah, and there is actually the translation document that goes, the report when those were issued, and it runs, 20, 30 pages, where, why was this chosen, and, what were the discussion points around different elements, and that is available, and I think we do direct people to read it. It's on our website as a document that's available.
Yeah.
So it...
it is part of the kind of help toolboxes that measure developers have on our website. I think kind of going further to your point is that we are looking at possibly doing some webinars or online education programs to really try to help have something online that people can access that helps them walk through the process, because that is something
that
we have
heard. That's exactly what I was getting at, is once people submit a letter of intent or whatever, or even if it's people that might be interested, maybe not wait for them to do that, but to offer a webinar that people could walk through it, so that you don't get so many that are missing pieces. I think your chances would be better of getting something that probably meets the criteria.
And NQF, I guess, is only 10 years old, and so as Jeff said, we still have a lot on our plate, and it's still growing. So that is definitely something that has been, we're working on, and we actually have an education department on this floor, but those are the type of issues that they're looking
at. Webinars work really well.
Do they also get a copy of a complete submission? This is what a good one looks like. Yeah, as you said that, I thought, you know, when you go online to shop or something and you hover over an item too long and there's an immediate iChat thing that comes up, like as if you can't pick out that pair of shoes, so would you like to speak with me about it? That's almost what needs to exist. As you struggle with an individual item, perhaps, you know, Ian, you would pop up and say, let me help you walk through this.
And we do have dialogues and follow-ups with measure developers from the list that came in under the intent to submit. We do then have reach out and conversations with some of the developers of, you know, question of, you know, what do I need to put here? How do I fill this out? And so those dialogues do happen if the measure developer is willing to engage in that. And I guess just one thing, Joel, to kind of follow up where you were going, I know this probably doesn't answer completely where you want to get, but I did meet with individuals, I don't know if the steering committee is aware of this group, National Association for Behavioral Health, here, and actually they're a member of NQF, and so one thing that NQF is willing to do for members is being willing to act as kind of that convening entity for members who, I guess for entities who are members. And it was, I was speaking with Rob Miller, who is the president there, and as an organization who really is wanting to start looking at quality improvement and measurement, they were left of, you know, where do we go from here? And they were really trying to look for, you know, where are other colleagues out in the field that we can connect with? And so NQF was willing to serve as that really convening body for that purpose. And I know one thing I've been working with membership is trying to find a list of people who they need to be speaking with. And I think that's hopefully something that we'll be able to get from every member of the steering committee is, are there individuals or entities out there that developers or individuals within this field who want to start looking at quality improvement need to be speaking with? So,
yeah, I would just say that when you do the webinars and do the training, I would incorporate specific examples from behavioral health for the folks, because my experience is that our field in general tends to be less trained, I think, in population-based and epidemiologic approaches to behave, to care.
You know,
Actually, I have a kind of a related point. As you talk about giving feedback to members, and I don't know who are members of National Quality Forum or who you connected with, but psychometricians, I mean, there's groups of researchers out there who I'm sure you could hook people up with, but in looking at these, so my background's in clinical psychology, I have extensive background in psychometrics, and what I saw in most of these was appalling as far as that goes. And so being able to, as we've identified these areas and we have people who are interested in developing them, hook them up with people who do that kind of research and can maybe aid them, it ends up benefiting both. Folks like this are always looking for research projects, maybe not always, but you could probably find someone interested, even graduate students who would be looking for some type of project along these lines, would be an amazing service to provide to people.
I think, this whole issue of extending this to people who don't see themselves as measure developers, but also who don't see themselves as working in the field of quality improvement or measuring quality. I think that when Glenn was talking about all these people who are out there, I can think of colleagues who do lots of good stuff. They develop tools, they measure clinical outcomes, they do assessment, they look at care processes, health services, delivery, and they're not, but they wouldn't self-identify as working in the area of quality or quality improvement, but they do. You know, the joke 20 years ago when I first got into, or 25 years ago when I got into geriatrics was, I was working at the interface of medicine and psychiatry and working with a lot of older adult populations and the other health professionals who take care of them, and then realized, gee, I guess I'm a geriatrician. But I think, and actually I had a mentor when I was a fellow who was a hematologist-oncologist who did work on tumor senescence, but he didn't think of himself as an aging researcher. And he ended up ultimately, after people pointed out that you could do these collaborations and work in this area, and we need somebody to be a leader of this group, he ended up as a director of a geriatric research center. And so he was not originally a card-carrying geriatrician, but he did enough work in areas so relevant to tumors and aging and immunology and aging that it was a no-brainer in terms of taking a fairly senior investigator and sort of retooling his career in, or actually not so much retooling as just reconceptualizing, and he ended up going to some different meetings after that. So, I mean, I just tell that story because I think there are a lot of people out there who are working in fields and doing that incremental work that's so clearly related, but they're not even beginning to think of themselves as belonging in this enterprise. And I think that's a challenge because you can't just put out a call for measures and you can't just say we're working on quality because quality is not something they're identifying with. So how do you get at that? I think that's something that takes a broader kind of conceptual re-education and maybe looking at certain target groups. I have to think more strategically about how you would get at those folks, but they're out there. And I think that I think Glenn was saying there's a ton of great work going on that really fits. We're just not tapping it.
One area where I think NQF and mental health could better intersect is on the overuse, underuse, waste. We talked a little bit that is because you keep somebody in treatment for three visits, for argument's sake, a good thing, a bad thing, or something in between. And the reality is we don't have very much good data about that. And I think to try to align the broad themes that NQF is pursuing and they're being pursued in a national health care reform debate would help move our field of mental health forward as well. The other comment I wanted to make was NQF often has a theme or at least some sub-themes at its annual conferences and member meetings. To highlight mental health at one of those very specifically, I think would help really move the field along as well as bring some of the experts in this arena together. And it would be a relatively accomplishable sort of task.
Our next step is to do task two, which I don't think we have time to do today, which is gaps. You think we have time?
I think what you've done is you've been doing that for the last 30 minutes in many ways. It's been embedded in a lot of ways, and
it has.
I think you've put in a really good 2 days' worth of work, and I don't know about you, but my brain's tired. And so I think that with the very richness of what you've discussed, that we're going to be able to begin to draft something, that we start to summarize some of these concepts and formulate it in a way that will allow you to look at it critically and say, okay, let's make it this and this and change it here and change it there, rather than start with a blank piece of paper. I think you've given us enough good ideas to start and to build something that then you can go back and react and edit and change and embellish and do whatever you want to it. But and I think until we get something a little more solid for you to work with, it may be not the best use of time right now, especially after you've spent two solid days doing the other stuff. Just in terms of where we're going to go in next steps is we will be writing this up in terms of a summary. It'll include the votes, the discussion points, and all of that. You'll get to see it and be sure we've captured it accurately. Additionally, this has been recorded and transcribed. And so the transcription, the recording, we'll share with you, and it will be posted on our website. So, you know, you can relive these 2 days anytime you want to. So I can tell you that transcript is actually vital to doing these write-ups because we can go back and use your words. I use your words and quote them all the time. So that's really where we're going for it. And most of your decisions, I think, are pretty solid. I don't think we have a lot of follow-up in terms of the measures. Ian, you were going to review which measures the group ultimately decided to move forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many did we get?
I got five.
Really?
Endorsed or recommended, and 13 that we did.
How does that compare to some of the others?
Is that, I don't know.
Is that right?
Sorry, I was trying to remember. We did not recommend retention, right?
Correct. So I think it was four. We had the three measures submitted by Minnesota Community Measurement. That was measure number 11, depression remission at 12 months,
measure number 12, depression remission at 6 months, and that was the other measure that was the real, I guess, linking measure was measure 22, depression utilization of the PHQ-9 tool. And as a group, it looked like we were voting on that to link to those other two measures previously discussed. The last measure that the steering committee ultimately decided to push forward was measure number 47. That was the inpatient consumer survey that we discussed a little bit later.
Well, I was counting falls, but that wasn't the falls as submitted. Right. That was the
recommendation. Then there's, and then there's
that made several formal recommendations.
And it'll be important for you all to review as we go back and write those out. Because they are just as much the recommendation of measures to be endorsed, your recommendations for some other things, because there are implications around, say, the falls measure, the serious adverse events measure, those sorts of things are very important outcomes of what you've done here. Not only the summary of this meeting, we will then be turning it into a draft report that will go out for public comment. And so that's Ian's main chore for the next couple of weeks. With any follow-up, sometimes there's some clarifications. You had some questions. He'll be doing the follow-up. And I believe, what's the schedule for going out for public comment, early June? I think it's early June. So we've got a few weeks to kind of, do some back and forth and review and get the wording right and all of that kind of stuff and get it edited. But it will go out for 30-day public comment, NQF member review. We get comments. Sometimes we get 100, 200 comments. Sometimes we get 800 comments. It really just, it's highly variable. And so we will then be looking to respond to each of those comments and circle back with you to help us do that. And perhaps comments might change some of your recommendations. Who knows? There may be enough feedback that you want to reconsider things, and that will be the purpose of that. So then after that, we will, that's been sort of shaken down and our revisions made, we'll then take it out to NQF members for voting. Those votes then go to the Consensus Standards Approval Committee and the Board of Directors with anticipated endorsement of the measures by November, I believe it is. So that's kind of where the rest of the year comes out. I do think, Ian, were there any other follow-ups you wanted to mention?
I mean, I guess I have two other points I want to talk about, but if you want to finish.
No, I think that's what you can expect from us, and we'll try and keep you posted on anything as it's happening, certainly to let you know.
And Alzheimer's, we're going to get some.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of the other points I was going to follow up on. So for those kind of were interested in participating in the Alzheimer's Dementia Work Group, for those who are here, if you want to just briefly talk before you leave, I think Katie said that she would be willing to head that little subgroup up. And so I've been working with her. I know she's actively soliciting some outcome measures that she's identified out there. So I can share that with the small work group who wants to participate, and we can move forward from there. So, and I think this work will really have to be done. It's not going to be another in-person meeting, but this will be done via phone conference or online voting, if we do get measures in terms of reviewing. I guess overall would very much like to thank everyone for your participation. Greatly appreciate it. It's been, I think, a wonderful experience. And one thing that I would greatly appreciate, as well as I know other members or entities are part of NQF, if you do have suggestions of individuals or entities who we should be working with or having a dialogue with, I would greatly appreciate it if you could just shoot me an email, whether it be a name of an organization or a specific contact somewhere. I think that would be very informative as we try to move forward and work through some of these gaps, just to make sure that we have the right people at the table or are helping to educate the right people in the NQF process. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to say I think Jeff and Trish did a great job, and particularly with some of the measure developers who, while we were there sort of criticizing, hopefully constructively, I think the two of you did a particularly good job of being encouraging and supportive. And I think that was an important ambassador role.
cogent expertise. That was very helpful.
And I guess just one last point. If you do have those NQF measure evaluation forms and you're not going to use them again and you're just going to recycle them, we can actually take those back from you and we'll reuse them at another steering committee meeting. So we'll save some trees. So thank you very much.